Okay, at this time, I would like to introduce our first speaker, Kristen G from the Afternoon Delight group of in the North Central West Virginia area of NA. Yay.
Thanks, Alex. So my name is Kristen and I'm an addict. Yeah, I saw some laughter at the name of my home group. Would you believe that it is at noon? So I am from West Virginia. I've been living there for almost 6 years. I will get to that a little bit as far as this topic goes. I moved there whenever I had 2 years clean. But, you know, just to start out with a little bit about, you know, unity. I never really felt that, you know, my entire life, especially, you know, as a, you know, a child. I'm from a split family and, I had some pretty abusive, step siblings and a stepfather. And, you know, so I didn't really like, didn't really feel like I fit in anywhere. Like, I was the poor, dirty kid in school. I remember like just telling my mom this like a couple weeks ago that like I remember all of the kids in school talking about getting PlayStations for Christmas and I had no idea what the fuck a PlayStation was. And I remember is like saying like, oh yeah, I got one and it's like purple and green. And like, you know, it's like 3 years later, I finally find out what a PlayStation is and it's like only that like awful gray color. But anyway, you know, I just didn't really like find my niche until it came to using. And that's where like, you know, people, they didn't really care about who I was or what I was about except for the drugs. And, so whenever I came to Narcotics Anonymous, that is whenever like I felt the most at home and the most welcome. And, I found out about Narcotics Anonymous whenever I was in treatment. There were some people in that area that brought meetings in, under H&I. And, I remember them saying that like, you know, as soon as I get out, I need to make it to a meeting like that day. And, you know, I didn't get to the recovery house I was going to be living in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania until like 9 or 9:30 that night. And there wasn't a meeting. And I thought for sure, like, this is it. I'm fucking done. You know, like, this is the end of me. Like, I'm not going to make it to a meeting the night I get out. But I went to a meeting the next day. You know, as a newcomer, like it's, at first, like for me, it was really hard to feel like this program was going to work for me. And, I also felt entirely useless, worthless and helpless. And, you know, I started to get to know a few people and everything, still didn't really feel like I belonged entirely. I knew that I was an addict. There was no question. For me, you know, I didn't know if I was done using yet. Like I had just turned 21 whenever I got clean. And, you know, but I knew that like this was my only shot left, you know, because I had tried and, you know, I tried everything and nothing worked. And so this was my last chance. And so, you know, I did everything that was suggested to me and not suggested, directed, like, you know, it's those basic things that, you know, you get told over and over and over in the beginning and you still hear at almost every single meeting years later, you know, you go to meetings, you get a sponsor, you get a home group, you know, you start reading literature, you start studying that literature, you know, doing step work, and just don't use no matter what. And so like, I took that stuff to heart because I was pretty desperate for my life and, so I did all of those things. I got a home group and I learned how to be of service, through that home group. And I remember like the first commitment that I had like two going on at the same time. And that was like showing up early to help set up the meeting, you know, in Harrisburg, like where I was living, I mean, a small meeting had like 50 people in it. And so there was a good bit of process to setting up. You made like 5 pots of coffee at the same time. And so I learned how to use a percolator. And, you know, then they also had the greeter at the door that hugs every person that comes into the meeting. And, you know, they expressed to me like the importance of like showing up to do these things and like, you know, even just hugging people at the door, like that could have been the first hug that that person's had in months, you know? And I knew how important that felt to me, my first hug in a meeting. And so like, you know, doing these, what appeared to be like really, you know, minuscule things in service were fucking huge for me in the beginning. Am I allowed to curse here? Word. All right. So, I mean, I'm going to eventually cry because I love Narcotics Anonymous so much, and it's hard for me to speak about unity and service without being extremely passionate about it because it means so much to me and it saved my life. So those what appeared to be really teeny tiny things that I could start doing on a home group level, like they ended up keeping me coming back and saving my life. Because like I was crying myself to sleep every night. I was facing 12 to 40 years in prison. I was 21 years old and like I hadn't seen my daughter in a year. I had nothing and, I had no hope. And I didn't know why I was staying clean. I thought for sure I was going to go away for a long time. And I just knew that I didn't want to die. And I didn't want to keep getting high anymore because of the consequences. And it wasn't fun anymore. You know, the fun had gone away. And so like just those few little things that I could do once a week, you know, it kept me coming back and it made me feel like I was just the teensiest little less of a piece of shit, you know? And just a little bit less useless and worthless. And that accrued over time, like to be something bigger for me, you know? I started going to area service and that's how I met the first sponsor that I had for a significant period of time, you know? And there was like almost 40 home groups in that area. So it was easy to not meet everyone, you know? And, so I met her in service work and, you know, she had a lot of time clean and she knew a lot of stuff about service work and, she really had her shit together. And I was like, this is who I want to have as my sponsor, you know? And so she started getting me and more involved in the area. She started pushing me towards that. And, you know, I had a lot of people in my life that I met through service. You know, the majority of the people that like are closest to me today, are people that I met in service. You know, I got involved in H&I whenever I had 6 months clean and, I continued doing H&I up until like right before COVID. And then all of the commitments had to go away for a while. But, you know, so that's been something that like I've been extremely passionate about. And one of the most beautiful things is being able to see, someone that was in a facility and an outside meeting. It makes every single second of doing that work worth it, you know? Even whenever you can tell that like, you know, the majority of the people aren't listening. They're picking at their toes or whatever the hell they're doing and trying to flirt with the girl across the room or the guy. And, you know, but something lands, you know, and I know for me that like, I was very distracted in treatment, but like something landed in my head, you know, that seed was planted. And, whenever I was ready to take things seriously, like I knew exactly what to do, because of those people coming in and delivering a message. So, you know, whenever I sponsor people now, like I don't just like highly recommend that they get involved in service. Like, I pretty much like force it upon them. You know, I did regional service for a long time. And like, the way that my region does it, I'm in the Mountaineer region, which is almost the entire state of West Virginia. But the way that we do it is, it's a full weekend, you know, it's all day Saturday and most of the day Sunday, and you stay the night there unless you live like really close. And, it's every 3 months. So like I will like bring people for the weekend with me and stuff, and just to see that there's something different, you know. There's other home groups, you know, that you can get information from, and like there's a whole lot of unity to be had in those type of, you know, service settings. You know, that's where we get different ideas for different things. We learn that like home groups need support, you know, what areas need support. You know, West Virginia is a very rural state, and there's some areas that have needed support for years. And like, I wouldn't know that unless I was involved in those things, because messages don't always get delivered on the other end, you know? This was whenever I had about 2 years clean. I moved to West Virginia to be closer to my daughter, because that relationship had, began to reconnect, and I left behind everyone that I knew whenever I got clean, you know. And I was scared. Like, I mean, I cried a lot on the drive, and I was scared, but like I wasn't full of fear. It was more of like, you know, the anticipation, you know, like, I wonder if people are going to like me. I wonder if people are, like, the people in Narcotics Anonymous are going to accept me, which is an insane thing to think, because I'm accepted everywhere I go in Narcotics Anonymous. But, like, you know, I was still pretty new to the program, having 2 years, and, like, you know, didn't have the experience of moving to a completely different state. And so I just didn't know what to expect. And what happened for me is, you know, I instantly was greeted and everything. The majority of people, you know, thought that I was brand new to the program, and they came up and hugged me and everything. And that was a great sign, you know, I realized how they treated newcomers. You know, they would greet them, you know, which is huge. And, like if my first meeting I had gone in there and someone didn't say hi to me or hug me, or like, you know, even attempt to shake my hand or whatever, like, I'm not sure I would have felt welcome from the, you know, from that. So, you know, I instantly felt like, you know, okay, this is a great sign. And, I got a home group as soon as I could. I think it was within the first like 2 weeks, you know. I found a group that had lower attendance, lower amount of, home group members. And I knew I could make it to their meeting and like help them and become a part of. And, what I didn't realize is like just how important that was going to be for me to, develop, you know, a new family, you know, in a new area. And, I went off of the rails with some character defects whenever I moved to West Virginia. Like, I was doing a lot of insane behaviors, and like, you know, the people there, they didn't know that that was unlike me. They also didn't really know what was going on because I didn't let them in. And eventually, like, you know, after I think it was about 9 months of like not like going to meetings almost every single day, but not really letting people like get to know me and let like allow myself to be vulnerable with them. A woman that I'm close friends with now, her son had been attacked. He was also in recovery, and he went back out, and someone took a hatchet to his head and left him in the trunk of a car to die. And like, I remember, getting that phone call. I was the second person she had called because it was just right there in her phone, and she didn't know what to do. She thought he was dead. And, So I show up at the hospital, and then all of a sudden there's like 100 other people from Narcotics Anonymous in that waiting room, you know, in the ICU. And they had to give us a whole other like big conference room to use as a waiting room because there were so many people. And I saw, you know, what unity was about in this area, you know, whenever something happens, like we show up for each other, you know, and, it wasn't because everyone knew this kid, you know, it wasn't because everyone knew her. They just knew that like these people needed love and they needed Narcotics Anonymous to show up. And so like, I mean, it's almost as if they came in by the busload, you know, and, I knew that I was home at that point, you know, being there for that, like, it changed everything for me in West Virginia, you know, like I said, like, I finally felt like I had found, you know, my home and I had found my family. And that was after 9 months of not allowing myself to be vulnerable with anyone, but still being involved in service. Like, I felt then comfortable to the point where like I was able to be honest about like these character defects that I had been acting out on and like risky behaviors that like, you know, it could have gotten me into a lot of trouble in life, you know, not abusing, but like not really walking straight and narrow, you know, and now like my life is full of all kinds of different like bubbles of people that like, you know, I've met all of these people from service work, of all different types. And then I've met these people from service work and other organizations and they're also in recovery. Like, you know, everyone that I know is because of service work pretty much, you know, in the majority, I would have to say that like all of the people I know that have stayed clean for the long haul have been involved in service. You know, and sometimes we take breaks, but not for long, you know, for me, it's like the key to staying clean, you know, and like something that like I've learned over the past, like I'd have to say the past 6 months, you know, I've learned a lot from, you know, this pandemic and, how I maintain my relationships and how I also don't maintain my relationships. And, what I had found is that like, you know, let's just say with my mother, for instance, that's always been a painful relationship for me. It's never been one where, I felt like I had a mom, really, you know, I have been of service to my mom for the past 6 months by calling her and letting her know that she is worth getting to know and she is worth spending time with and she is worth visiting. And I'm of service to my mother in that way. And like, I've been able to do that in other relationships in my life. You know, if I have some free time, I know that there's someone that is living alone or whatever, like I will call them and check in on them. You know, I'm being of service to these people in my life and these relationships that I value. And, I've also learned how to be of service to myself. And there's a difference between that and self-centeredness. And, you know, nothing that I do for myself is at the expense of anyone else. I have learned how to have unity with myself. You know, I disassociated from my own body like for a long time, you know. I hated my body. I wasn't here, you know, I pretended in my head that like, you know, whenever people were talking to me, they were actually like seeing a completely different face than the one I'm carrying around. And, so I've practiced like learning how to, you know, become unified with my body, my physical self, and how to take care of that relationship and how to take care of that body and to be of service to it, you know, to do good things to it, eat healthier. You know, I make mistakes, but That's what life is about. You know, I've learned that eating an entire pint of Ben and Jerry's does not serve me. And it does not serve my body very well. And I don't feel unified with my body. Like, you know, the mind and the body don't align there all the time. So, but yeah, no, service work has been it's just been a huge part of my life. You know, I've spent 25% of my life, more than 25% of my life in recovery now. And so like, I don't typically like ever reflect on what my life was like prior to Narcotics Anonymous, because there's been so much time spent in Narcotics Anonymous and in recovery. And, you know, but I think about sometimes, you know, like, just, you know, just how different my life is today. It's not always healthy to compare, but that's a healthy comparison. And, I'm just so grateful for Narcotics Anonymous, you know, and, I finally, you know, feel like I belong somewhere, and I feel like I'm able to help people and, to be a part of a group and, you know, learn how to, have a group conscience, instead of like me always needing to get what I want, you know, because it's not how this works, you know. Learning how to work with other people has affected how I'm able to work with other people in other areas of my life. You know, I'm able to see that like, okay, this person that I'm going to spend a couple hours with, like, they may be a little like angry, and I understand that like they're exhausted and they are lonely and they haven't eaten much food. Like, I'm able to like process things, you know, a little differently now whenever it comes to like work relationships and everything, because I've gotten to have all of that practice with people in Narcotics Anonymous and service work, you know. Like, it's talked about like how back in the day people were throwing chairs across the room and shit whenever they didn't get their way. But like, I can definitely see that still happening. Like, you know, I have seen, all kinds of behavior and service work, and like, all of it is something that like I learned from, and I develop an understanding of, you know. And so I'm able to carry that, like I said, into all these other areas of my life, you know, talking about politics, whatever, you know, how different everyone is and how valuable all of those things are, you know, how valuable every single person is into, you know, keeping things moving in this world. And anyway, I'm about out of time, but I'm grateful for, you know, being asked to share here. And you know, I look forward to seeing you guys again in meetings and to visiting your areas. I work all over the country for a living, so I hope to see all of you at some point or another. And thank you for letting me share, especially about a topic that, like, you know, it touches my heart and my life so much. And I think about it all the time. You know, thank you for letting me cry a little bit. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Kristen.
Thanks, Kristen.
Thank you.
Okay, now I would like to introduce our second speaker, Ron H. from the More Will Be Revealed group in the greater Albuquerque area of Narcotics Anonymous.
Hello, I'm Ron. I'm an addict. And what is LMHANA? Where is this? Where am I?
The Laurel Mountain Highlands area of Narcotics Anonymous, southwestern Pennsylvania.
Ah, okay. It's good to meet you all. I guess first of all, thank you, Kristen, for that share. There's a lot that I related to, and a lot of it really touched me. And I think, you know, the stuff you were saying about, how can you not love the fellowship that saved your life and that saves, saves us from the kind of, I don't know, you know, it's one thing to say save my life, you know, like a knight on a white steed or whatever. It's another thing to say, it gave me the ability to start functioning again, to turn the ship around. You know, like, the life that I had going was heading in a really bad direction. And even when I decided I don't want to head in that direction anymore, you know, I give up. I'm ready to do something differently. And then to have this compulsion that would drive me back to keeping on digging the hole that I was in, or to get a little bit of hope because I, you know, okay, I get it. I can't use like that. And then get a little bit of hope back in me, even early in my, after I first started going to meetings, and then to end up loaded again. For me, it would kind of take me back to, when I went to my very first meeting ever. I was in college at the time, barely, but I was still in college. It was like, I was trying to hold it together, you know, and I had a good buddy. We did most of our kind of partying together, and I went to a meeting, and when I got home, I didn't tell him where I was going or anything. He said, let's go, whatever the equivalent is, let's go get high. You know, it was whatever I don't remember the specifics. And I said, no, I don't think I'm going to do that. I went to this meeting and I think I'm going to give it a chance. And he goes, like, meeting? Like, what meeting? What kind of meeting was that? And I said, it was Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And he goes, he just started shaking his head because he had seen me try everything. This was in the late 70s. So, he had seen me try everything. He had seen me try religion and, even at that time, you remember the Reverend Sun Young Moon ring any bells? Like, this guy was kind of new on the scene, and he was getting, you know, it was supposed to be the religion that unified all religions, you know, sort of like, and I'm a spiritual seeker. I'm looking for something better. I went to one of their meetings one time. So basically he had seen me try everything. He just shook his head and he said, Ron, don't you get it yet? That you're the kind of people that shit like that doesn't work for. And, you know, later on, like, and you know, I mean, first of all, that resonated with some real truth to me. Like, oh my God, I'm the kind of people that shit like this doesn't work for. I've tried stuff like this and it doesn't work for me. You know, maybe you guys can go and tell all your happy stories and whatever and get clean. I can't seem to do that. Every time that I try to do anything, I end up loaded again. So I'm in that sort of state. And the last time I used, I had 9 months clean. Before I used, or I was just about to celebrate 9 months clean. And, I remember waking up in the morning and those words were still ringing with me. Like, I'm the kind of people that this stuff doesn't work for. So when I saw Kristen's tears and that feeling of gratitude for Narcotics Anonymous, I thought I put it in that kind of category. Like, I'm the kind of people, you know who we are. You know where part of our unity is, comes from? We are the kind of people that shit like this doesn't work for. That's what our first step says. We admitted we were powerless over our addiction. So, you know, in some way it translates into, I'm the kind of people that shit like this doesn't work for. So to live with that conviction. And then one day at a time, just for today, meeting after meeting, service meeting after service meeting, have that feeling go away. And have it be replaced with hope and an actual roadmap for my life that I can see myself living and not falling back into my same old traps. You know, that has been a very powerful thing for me. So, you know, I know the topic is unity in service. So I'll talk a little bit about my service history with trying to find the unity theme, which is not very difficult. Although sometimes, frankly, in the service arena, unity is a challenge, is it not? We sometimes see each other. Like I, for example, served on the World Board of Narcotics Anonymous for many years. I worked at the World Service Office for some years. So there are some people who, for whom that resume is already a black mark. You know, we're funny people. We are funny people that, if you're in that camp, I treat you with fundamental mistrust. If you're in that, if I'm in this camp, you treat me with fundamental, And so my first thing that I would like to say about unity and service is I just try not to ever, ever do that, period. And if I can, it's hard when someone's been talking shit about you, like if you're trying to, this expression that people say sometimes, no good deed shall go unpunished. Sometimes you can feel that way in service, it's like, what a great idea. We're going to have maybe a little outreach thing. We're going to get this other area involved. Let's do it. And we get excited and some of us start doing it. And we find ourselves driving and going to these little meetings and Nowheresville. I got clean in Fargo, North Dakota. So there was a lot of Nowheresville in the nearby areas. And we'd go try to get the meeting started. But then what starts to happen? People, those guys are just off on their own doing it. It's like, okay, what should I have? All I was trying to do is carry the message, and sometimes if you start doing that sort of stuff without connecting it properly to area and region, there's no accountability in it. So you get people with great hearts and great intentions, but no accountability to the service structure. And so disunity, starts to occur even when they're trying to do something good. So I guess what I first do as far as unity in service in Narcotics Anonymous is I first say, like, you guys must be near this great event called Marlikna, right? Must be somewhere in your neck of the woods. So as a person from the West, I live in Albuquerque. I lived in California for many years. I worked at the World Service Office. I came to Marlikna as a board member. You can imagine how we sometimes say, okay, Marlikna is where you're going to go and stand there and be attacked, right? That's sort of the basic thing from that point of view. You're going to go where people are hostile toward you and be attacked by them. And that's going to happen at that place. If you have never walked in those shoes, should try walking in those shoes. But what I would do, I am sort of one of the go-to people that would come to Marlikna because my heart position and my honest, real position is I'm going to go and not look at it as being attacked. I'm going to go and look at it as people have some concerns about things, about the way service should be done, about the way that they believe it's not being done, about certain ways in which money and prestige has factored into the way people at the world level do service and that sort of stuff. So I'm going to go there and listen to their concerns and speak directly to them. And not give them the party line, but just talk to them and listen to them. And if there's points that are where we are off base, just admit it. I can see your point. I can see why it would look like that. And then share another point of view, but share it from a point of view of mutual respect. So I do believe that even I'm going right after some of the stuff that is kind of notoriously disunifying in Narcotics Anonymous. You can talk about like the literature stuff and the baby blue and there's stuff that in service that is really kind of steeped in disunity. And I still say the way to bridge this disunity is to ask, what does that person really care about here? you know, like, what do they really care about here? And I almost always find what they really care about is what I care about, the addict who still suffers, the access that addict who still suffers, how do we do what we do in such a way that addict who still suffers has access to the life-saving message that I found that changed my life. So how do we do it? And, you know, we can have disagreements about the best way to do it. We can have disagreements about how to interpret some of the traditions while we're doing it. Like, what does it mean? What does attraction rather than promotion mean? You know, that's a hard one. It's actually difficult, I think, to say, what is, you know, like if we're creating a PSA, a public service announcement to be played on the TV and radio, how do we do that in a way that is in line with the principle of attraction rather than promotion? And to me, you know, the only way to walk through issues like that is with group conscience. Group conscience is the magic, I think, when it comes to unity. And by group conscience, I don't mean taking votes. That's not what I mean. I mean each of us consulting our own hearts, our own conscience, our own belief about what's truest to our principles, and articulating that with each other so that we can all listen to that. We can listen to people who see it differently than we do. And we can have this pooling of each of our individual conscience in the way that we see an issue. And then by whatever means we make a final decision, but that listening with respect to other people's points of view, to me, that's the key to unity and service. Unity and service doesn't mean agreeing with each other in service. It means having a way to consult our hearts and minds, our experience, our sense of what we each care about, or what we're grateful for, pooling that together and coming up with an approach that we can all live with. Another element of unity and service for me personally is to know how to surrender when it goes another way. You know, like if I can really believe it's so important that we do it this way, and I can tell you which principles I believe are at stake, you know, like which traditions are at play, why it's best to do it the way I think it, you know, and I can speak my mind, and then you will speak your mind. And then in the end, we will make a decision. And if it doesn't go my way, the application of the first tradition right there is surrender. You know, if I'm so right and this isn't going to go well, then I guess it's not going to go well. And I'll be there to help when we have to do something different. Or I could be wrong. And I was so sure that this was the wrong decision, but you guys chose it. I have an example, actually. Well, when I was the delegate for my region, that time we called them RSRs back in the, I guess that would have been 97, 98, 97, I think. And the book, the step working guides were up for approval. And, you know, at that time I'm living in New Mexico. I haven't been involved in any World Service stuff for a while. I hadn't played a role in helping to write this book. And I'm the RD, and I look at this book and I read through it and I go, I'm a little concerned that we're going to now have a dogmatic kind of orthodoxy about how to work the steps, when I see step working as a very kind of creative process that happens between sponsor and sponsee, because, you know, I got clean at a time where we had no basic text and no it works how and why, and no just for today, and no living clean. And we just didn't have any of that literature. And so the program just lived in this dynamic kind of creative interchange between sponsor and sponsee. And I was concerned about it. Nothing about the particulars of the book, just the concept itself, that we're going to have a step working guide now. And that's going to cause us to be more cookie cutter in the way that we approach. So this was my position. This is how I felt. And I'm the regional delegate. So what's my job? Is it to go from area to area and persuade them of what I think about this? Or is it to go from area to area and listen to them about what they think about this and carry that forward to the World Service Conference, where I'm going to vote either to approve or not approve this piece of literature? And so for me, it was so clear that as the RD, it's not my job to go around to these car workshops and meetings and tell them what I think. You know, there might be issues where that is my job. You know, like if it's something going on and I'm fairly well informed about it because I've been at those meetings and blah, blah. Okay. In that case, it is my job to come and report that back and dialogue about that. Maybe even tell them my opinion, let them then tell me what their decision is, but not on the matter of approving a piece of literature. I don't have any special angle on that. I just have my opinion. That was very clear to me. So for me, it was about going around to car workshops and stuff and biting my tongue about what I think. And my region overwhelmingly said, let's have a step working. Let's have these step working guides. That'll be great for the next generations of NA members. And so I went to the World Service Conference, and if I would have been asked, Ron, what's your opinion? What do you think we should do? I might have voted one way, but that's not what I was being asked. And so for me, unity also involves knowing when to set my own stuff aside. You know, when to set my ego aside, when to set my opinion aside, when to set my will and my strong personality aside, and open my heart and listen to you, you know, and be willing to be wrong. And sometimes it's not that I'm wrong, it might be, but sometimes it's just that I am one of many and I have my point of view, and we're going to make a decision collectively. And then my job is not to now go around and sow seeds of discontent or sow seeds I can't think of the right word, but talking shit, you know, about the decision that other people felt from in their hearts was the right decision, and I just disagreed. You know, so to me, there's a lot about just sort of having an addict personality, having a kind of a strong-willed personality, or sometimes being too fearful to express myself. Doesn't seem like that right now. I've been at this for a while, but I was certainly paralyzed by fear many times. Not sure that if I'm involved in service, if we're making a decision, do I even have the right to say my opinion? What if I say something stupid? You know, what if I say stupid shit and then you all kind of tolerate me and then go on about your business? It's just like terrifying. That at different points in my service life, that was terrifying. But just learning how to just say, okay, I'm not the most important person in the room. I'm just a voice, but I am a voice, and I am somebody who should speak from my heart and from my mind when the time is coming for us to make decisions. So yeah, unity and service. I would say this also, like, when I was pretty new in recovery, I was just finishing, you know, I had my college life kind of went to shit, but after I got clean, I was able to put it back together in that first year or so, and And pretty soon I was starting a career. I've been clean for 41 years. So I've had the benefit, the span in my recovery of looking at having a career, then getting started in a career, then evolving a career, and now I'm retired. So it's kind of nice. I've had Narcotics Anonymous as the center of my life for this whole thing. But, when I was just getting started in my career, I would go to these staff meetings at work. This is kind of a new thing for me. What's a staff meeting? Well, and what are the kind of power dynamics in this meeting, and who's making the decisions, and what should I say? Blah, blah, blah. Work stuff, And I started to recognize really early that the fact that I had been involved in service meetings where nobody's the boss, nobody's in charge, there are leaders, but that's by virtue of each one of us taking our turns playing a leadership role, and hopefully having some principles that help us become leaders. But there's nobody in charge and there's no authority structure to actually lead a group. I don't know if we think about how amazing this is in Narcotics Anonymous, to actually be a leader, like an area chair, let's say. To be a leader of a group like that and to have no authority basis on which to tell that group anything, but to instead just keep your eye on the ball of group conscience and facilitate a process by which we make decisions together. This is pretty powerful stuff. Where you go to a work environment, there's a clear authority structure, but for me to have cut my teeth about how to be in those kinds of meetings in Narcotics Anonymous without that authority structure, where principles come before personalities, where group conscience is the authority, not any person in the room. And then to apply that skill, the skills that I gained there, to my work life, my professional life, that's been a tremendous gift. The service is sort of like the dance floor on which we get to actually practice these principles with each other, in addition to doing it in our lives and all of that. But service is where we really do it together. And I think I've been sort of stressing this, but the concept of unity and service in part is a stress on the fact that that unity and service is challenging. It is challenging to have 20 opinions in the room and have to decide which way we're going to go, especially if you got really strong personalities who disagree. And so unity and service is fully bound up in our principles, our traditions, our concepts, our steps, the spirituality that we learn here and are constantly trying to practice. So for me, it's been the great gift of my life to serve Narcotics Anonymous by the first service position I ever had was a GSR position, but it was a GSR position in a town where there was one Narcotics Anonymous meeting and none of us had ever met anybody else who had ever been to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And so what does the GSR do? So I get elected. I go to the business meeting and say, I'm willing to serve. And they said, well, we have a GSR position open. I said, okay. So we had this little book that said, here's how you do a group. You have a secretary, a GSR, a treasurer. So I asked the guy who was a GSR before me, I said, what do you do? And he said, well, there's a phone number at the back of that book and you call it and you talk to the guy that answers the phone. The guy that answered the phone's name was Jimmy Kay. And so my very first service position I ever had was just calling Jimmy Kay and talking to him about our group and him coaching us about how to do it, how to keep it alive, learning how to take direction right from the very beginning. And then, all the way through that some of the stuff that just sort of has happened to me that I've been asked to do and that I've been privileged to do. It's just like, you know, I've got three kids that came along the way in my recovery, and they're all, the youngest one now is 30 some years old, you know, so to, just, it's kind of amazing to me as I look back in that whole trajectory and say, what has been kind of the centerpiece of that life? You know, it's been having a sponsor, working steps, going to meetings, and doing service. And doing service not just as a job, but actually having a vision that maybe another addict who is suffering the way I was suffering, another person stuck on this idea that this, he's the kind of person that shit like this doesn't work for, you know, might find some hope. And so how do we do that? How do we let them know we're here? How do we do the jobs that help when they reach out, like phone lines, like H&I, like public relations? And, you know, and then seeing that same spark in your heart, that's what you want to do too. You know, you might have a different opinion about how, but that's what you want, is to serve, to open the door for the suffering addict. And that's what I want. There's the connection of unity. We both have a vision for that happening for suffering addicts. If we keep our hearts and minds there, and with a proper respect for group conscience and getting our big old personalities out of the way and learning how to listen and trust other people, and you know, not talk shit when it goes another way, and learn how to surrender. I mean, one after another, you learn these skills and they apply everywhere in my life. There's nowhere in my life, my family life, my work life, my friendships, my marriage. There's all these skills we learn in service because unity is the first tradition. You know, it's like, we have all these other things kind of serve it and allow it. You know, that's, to me, it's sort of at the heartbeat of what makes Narcotics Anonymous so potent in our lives is that we have this heart of service at the center of it. And then we just work through our difficulties and our differences and make it work because we love it, you know, because we're so grateful. I am so grateful for what NA has given me. Holy shit. Try to imagine my life, how different my life is 41 years after I, walked in that door, person whose life was unraveling. Keep that trajectory for 41 more years. I have no idea if I'd have been alive here now or what my life would have looked like if I was. But what it looks like now is I'm married to the newcomer that I met, the 19-year-old newcomer that I met in the meetings. But we've been married for 38 years. We were crazy newcomers together. We got through all of that. We talk about having to work some principles to have some unity. You know, we got through all that, and we lived our whole lives together. Our house was full of Narcotics Anonymous instead of being full of drug. It was full of drug addicts, but it was full of recovering drug addicts. So what my kids grew up with is guys hugging guys, telling them telling each other that we love them, having just this rich community of people who know how to have fun and love each other. And so, yeah, the gift of unity and service has shown up everywhere in my life, every dimension of my life. So thank you for asking me to do this. I'm happy to come and participate in the Pennsylvania way, man. It's good to see you guys, and I love you.